Okay, good to vach everybody. Good evening. This shir is L'Zechus Rafur Shalema for my dear Talmud and friend, Rav Simcha Yitzchak Ben Mirla Liatka. I hope I'm pronouncing that name. I guess Marilyn will correct me if I'm mispronouncing. But he should have Rafur Shalema B'soch Shar Chole Yisrael, and I'm so honored that he asked me to say a shir in L'Zechus Rafur Shalema. So today we're going to be continuing in Pirkei Avos. From what I understand, we're supposed to be doing a Mishnah from Parakeh and the Mishnah from Parak Vav. It obviously would be unreasonable in the short amount of time to try to go through all of the Mishnayos in Parakeh and Parak Vav. So I figured I would share with you one idea from a Mishnah in Parakeh and one idea from a Mishnah in Parak Vav. So let's start with the idea from a Mishnah in Parakeh. Parakeh Mishnah Yates is probably one of the more peculiar Mishnayos in all of Chazal. If there is a more peculiar comparison that Chazal make anywhere, I don't know what it would be. The Mishnah tells us, "Kol mi sheyesh bo shlosha devarim halalu, hu mitalmidav shel Avram Avinu." That if a person has three particular traits, he is like a student of Avram Avinu. Ushlosha devarim acherim, a person has three other traits, hu mitalmidav shel Bilam HaRasha, and he would be considered like a student of Bilam HaRasha. What are these three traits? Ayin tova, v'ruach nemucha, v'nefesh shvala, mitalmidav shel Avram Avinu. All of these traits seem to relate to humility, that a person is not arrogant, he's not haughty, and that is a short sign of a student of Avram Avinu. But Ayin Ra'a, someone who's stingy and arrogant, Ruach Kavav and Nefesh Rechava, and he's a Bal Taiva, a Bal Gaiva, all of these things, Mitalmidav Shel Bilam HaRasha. So such a person is from the students of Bilam HaRasha. Ma Bein Talmidav Shel Avram Avinu Talmidav Shel Bilam HaRasha. And how do you distinguish between the two groups? Talmidav Shel Avram Avinu Ochlin Bal Mazeh V'Nochlin Ol Maba. The Talmidim of Avram Avinu get to eat in this world and they inherit in the next world. Shnemer Lahanchil O'Aveyeh Shotzu Seyem Amalei. Aval Talmidav Shel Bilam HaRasha Yorshin Gehenem V'Yordin L'Vershachas. But the Talmidim of Bilam HaRasha, they only inherit Gehenim and they go down to a Be'er Shachas, Shinamar Vata Elokim Toridem L'Ver Shachas, Anshe Damim Umir Melo Yechsu Yimeim Vani Eftach Bach. That is the Mishnah. Now what is unusual, what is strange about the Mishnah, is that generally speaking, when comparing two things, if one were to try to compare two different items, we usually have some basis for comparison. You wouldn't compare two things that have no basis for comparison whatsoever. There aren't nuances of difference between Avram and Bilam. There are worlds of difference between Avram and Bilam. You know, a better comparison would have been Ma bein Talmidav shel Avram Avinu l'Talmidav shel Yitzchak Avinu, or something like that. Meaning, in such a case, they are both tzaddikim. So it's understandable that you would have a basis for comparison, or you would say Ma bein Talmidav shel Haman l'Talmidav shel Bilam HaRasha. But to take Ma bein Talmidav shel Avram Avinu l'Talmidav shel Bilam HaRasha, these are such different worlds. They're entirely different things. Why would we choose these two characters in history to compare and contrast? Where is the basis for comparison? Additionally, when Hashem initially tells Bilam not to go, right? Bilam wants to go curse the Bnei Yisrael, and Hashem says, Lo selechi mehem, lo sa'ores ha'am, ki varuchu. Don't go, don't curse these people, they are a blessed people. And Rashi comments that Bilam's response was, Im kein avarachem. If you don't want me to curse them, so I won't curse them. I'll bless them. I'm going to go bless them. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the boss. I can't do anything HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want. Hashem runs the world. So if Hashem says, I'm not allowed to curse them, I'm going to bless them. But then Hashem says, Einim trichem lebirchascha, ki baruch hu. The way Chazal understand, they don't need your bracha, because they are already blessed. Mashal omrim letzira, lo miduvshach, lo miuktzach. And it's just like you would say to a bee that, or to a wasp, I don't want your honey and I don't want your sting. That so too we say to Bilam HaRasha, just like we don't want your klala, we're not interested in your bracha either. We're inherently blessed. There's no need for your bracha. Now I understand that, you know, we don't need the brachos of a Bilam HaRasha, but the mashal that we give for that is somewhat strange. Meaning, I don't want your honey, like you would say to a bee, I don't want your honey or your sting. I don't know, we do like bee honey. We actually like bee honey a lot. We really enjoy the honey of the bee. According to to honey.com, I kid you not, the average American consumes 1.3 pounds of honey annually. I think I probably consume more than that. I like honey in my tea when my voice is a little schwach at the end of a Shabbos. Why would we use bees' honey as the example of how we're not interested in Bilam's brachos? I don't want your honey. What do you mean I don't want your honey? I understand I don't want Bilam's brachos, but the mashal is a no move on, meaning generally speaking, a mashal is meant to make the nimshal more understandable. Over here, the mashal makes the nimshal less understandable. And a third question. The Mishnah, earlier in the fifth parak of Pirkei Avos, in Mishnah Vav, tells us that one of the amazing things that God created during Bein HaShemashos of Erev Shabbos B'Sheshes Yimei Bereshis, during the Bein HaShemashos period of that Friday of Sheshes Yimei Bereshis, one of the things Hashem created was the Pi HaAson, the mouth of the donkey. You know, that donkey that spoke back to Bilam, that talked back to Bilam. Where did he get the kochos to do that? Hashem created those kochos on Bein HaShemashos of Erev Shabbos of Sheshes Yimei Bereshis. Apparently, there were really big plans for this Pi HaAson from the very beginning of time. The irony of it is that it seems that the experiment failed. Bilam didn't listen to the donkey. You know, from Sheshes Yimei Bereshis, Hashem was planning on this donkey giving a whole Musar Shmuz to Bilam. And Bilam didn't listen until an angel came and spoke to him. The donkey spoke and he wasn't interested. And then an angel came and spoke and then Bilam had to listen. What was the point of having the donkey speak if Bilam wasn't going to listen anyway? So again, three questions. First, the Mishnah Perikei, Mishnah Yates, makes this comparison between Bilam HaRasha and Avraham Avinu, and it seems like such an odd comparison, because the two have nothing in common. Comparisons are normally when there's a nuance of difference. Second, why is it that the mashal we give to not being interested in Bilam's brachos is like we would say to a bee that I don't want your honey either, just like I don't want your sting? It's not true. We do enjoy bees' honey very, very much. And third, why is it that the Mishnah earlier in the fifth parak tells us that Hashem created the Pi HaAson during Sheshes Yimei Bereshis that failed? The Pi HaAson didn't work in the end of the day. I think the Yesod that answers all of these questions is the following. The Pasuk in Iyov tells us, Tzedek Lavashti Ve'il B'Sheni. And the Medrash elaborates in that Pasuk in Iyov Perek Chavtes and tells us that Amar Rabbi Chanina, Yesh Na'al Levusho Ve'il Levusho Na'alo. There are those that are good for their garment, but their garment is not appropriate for them. David na'al mizmaro, umizmaro na'alo. David was appropriate for his mizmorim, for his songs that he composed, and they were appropriate for him. Lochein ksiv lemala mizmar leDavid, v'kan ksiv leDavid mizmar. And that's why you have mizmar leDavid and leDavid mizmar. That the words could be flipped in one direction or the other. Meaning, it was an honor for David to sing those songs, and it was an honor for those songs to be composed by David. It was a symbiotic relationship. The trick with Nevuah is that Nevuah is great, and it's an honor for anybody to be a Navi and to say Nevuah. But Nevuah isn't appropriate for everybody. Meaning sometimes a person is a Navi, and it's beneath the Nevuah to work through that person. Meaning imagine you have an expensive piece of jewelry. It could be inherently valuable, inherently beautiful, but it would be totally out of place if you put it on a pig, right? That's the expression, putting lipstick on a pig, right? It's completely out of place. If you were to take that jewelry, you would take something valuable and beautiful, you get a beautiful dress and you put it on a dog or something like that, it's completely out of place. The Koach HaNevuah is very valuable, but it's entirely inappropriate when it's handled by the wrong person. So whereas Nevuah in the hands of the likes of Avram Avinu, of the likes of Moshe Rabbeinu, provides us with guidance, it provides us with inspiration, and it also humbles the conduit of the Nevuah to the point of the conduit declaring, Anochi Ofer Ve'efer, as Avram Avinu did, or the conduit becoming the Anav Mikol Adam, as Moshe Rabbeinu did. Nevuah in the hands of the likes of Bilam HaRasha turns into a source of enhanced gaiva, not anava. And that's exactly the message of the Gemara in Chulin Daf Petes. The Gemara in Chulin tells us, Lo mirubchem mikol ha'amim chashak Hashem b'chem. Hashem is not interested in Klal Yisrael because we're so much bigger or greater than other nations. Amr lema kresh baruch li Yisrael chashakni b'chem, sha'afilu b'sha'a sha'ani mashpia gedula, Hashem says, you know what my interest is in you, Klal Yisrael? My interest is that even at a time when I try to give you gedula, I try to give you honor and power, what do? You humble yourselves in front of me. Nasati gedula l'Avram Avinu. I gave a lot of power to Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu was Nasi Elukim b'Kirbeinu. He was the most respected and wealthiest person in the world. Amar Anochi Ofer Ve'efer. And his response was, Anochi Ofer Ve'efer. L'Moshe V'Aaron, Hashem gave Gedula to Moshe and Aaron, V'nachnu Ma. And they say, what are we? We're nobody. L'David V'ani Tola'as V'lo Ish. Hashem gave Nevuah to David HaMelech, and David HaMelech says, I'm like a worm, I'm a nobody. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that it's worthy, these people, these tzaddikim are worthy of the Nevuah because their reaction to having received the gift of prophecy is not to say, Magia li, I deserve it, I'm so great, but rather it's to humble themselves to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That is a Nevuah that is working through the proper conduit. And based on that, we can answer all the questions we began with. You know what the comparison between Avraham and Bilam is? It's that they were both given Nevuah. That's the obvious comparison. They were both Nevi'im. But it may even go beyond that. They may have both been good people prior to having received their Nevuah. The difference is, how did they react to that Nevuah? For Avram Avinu, it was a humbling experience. It caused him to be mevatel his own self-interest. Whereas Bilam took it as a great source of his own pride. It ruined him. All three characteristics of the Talmidim of Avram Avinu relate to humility and selflessness, right? What is it about the Talmidim of Avraham Avinu? Ayin Tova, they're generous. Ruach Nemucha, they're humble. Nefesh Shvala, they're not Balei Taiva, they're not interested in indulging themselves. And all of the characteristics of the Talmidim of Bilam HaRasha are the exact opposite. They're stingy, they're arrogant, they're Balei Taiva, they're interested in whatever they can get for themselves. When the Ummah HaOlam complained that they never had a Navi, the response is, you did have a Navi, but look what the experience did to him. Nevuah is not appropriate for everybody. Nevuah has to enhance the personality. And that brings us to the sting and the honey of the bee. Honey is a halachically confusing food. Generally speaking, the halacha is hayotzi min ha'asur asur. A person cannot consume products of non-kosher animals like pig milk. But honey comes from a non-kosher animal and it's perfectly kosher. Eretz Yisrael even praises in Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash, although that probably means Dvash Tamarim. The Gemara in Bechoros Dav Zayin explains that the bee's honey goes through the bee without the bee really contributing anything. If there would be blios of the bee itself in the honey, it would be ruined both physically and halachically. We would have no interest in such honey. Hashem tells Bilam that people need the messages of Nevuah the same way they need bee honey. The conduit is important. Mostly the conduit is important in his willingness not to taint the message, in his willingness to shrink away and say, it's not about me, it's about the message. And that is how a bee's honey is made. If the bee were to contribute anything to the honey wouldn't be kosher. We're not interested in the Nevuahs of Bilam, because the Nevuahs of Bilam come with Bilam. They don't only come as a message of Nevuah, they come with the personality of Bilam, with the Taivos of Bilam, with the Gaiva of Bilam, with the Ayin Ra'ah of Bilam. They're tainted with his own self-interest. So when Hashem approached Bilam, he did so with a donkey. Bilam didn't listen to the donkey, even though everything the donkey said made sense. It was a remarkable conversation, right? Before Disney or whatever DreamWorks came up with the idea of Shrek, I assume they got it from the story of Bilam's talking donkey, but the idea of a talking donkey, so you would think it's this valuable thing, a talking donkey. Everything the donkey said made sense. And Bilam didn't listen to a word he said. Instead, he listened to the Malach, even though the Malach just said the same thing that the donkey had said. But that was exactly the point. That's why Hashem created the Bia Asun. Hashem's point was that a message is valuable when it's heard from an angel, but a message is ignored when it's heard from a donkey. So Bilam, yeah, you have Nevuah. Nevuah is valuable when it comes through the likes of Avram Avinu. Nevuah is not valuable when it comes through the likes of a Bilam. And there's a profound message in this comparison. Because nowadays we don't have Nevuah, but we have Torah. and we look to teachers of Torah. The Gemara Maseches Moikatan tells us that in Marav Dom and Lamalach Hashem Tzavakos Yivakish Torah Mipiv, and Vizena Dom and Lamalach Hashem Tzavakos Al Yivakish Torah Mipiv. We only look for Torah from a Rav that's Dom and Lamalach Hashem Tzavakos. Why? Because the message is important when it comes through the proper messenger. When the message comes through the improper messenger, sometimes the Torah Shalol Lishma, a Torah that comes with self-interest, a Torah that comes without the proper tzidkus of the transmitter of the Torah, is not a Torah that we're supposed to be interested in. I was thinking as I was preparing this shiur, I was thinking about what I was going to say. So the two ideas that I wanted to share, I wanted to make sure that they aligned with our dear friend Simcha Yitzchak. And this first idea certainly does, and I think the second idea will as well. The idea that Simcha Yitzchak, who I've known since he was a high school student, and was not necessarily on a course to be a Marbitz Torah, a Mechaber Sfarim, at that point in his life. But then he grew in his Avas Hashem and Yiras Shemayim, and you saw this transformation into this exceedingly humble, soft-spoken person who is a proper transmitter of the Torah. And that's why he was so successful, he continues to be so successful in transmitting the Torah properly, in transmitting the Torah's messages properly, because like the bee's honey, he takes the messages of the Ribbono Shel Olam, takes himself out of it, that it's all about the Ribbono Shel Olam and his message. And I wanted to share with you a second idea, and this second idea is an idea I thought of this morning, and I was hoping it would relate to a mission in the sixth parak of Pirkei Avos. So right after Shabbos, I opened up the sixth parak of Pirkei Avos, which of course, you know, is the additional parak, the add-on parak. But and I was so thrilled to see that the very first Mishnah in the sixth parak of Pirkei Avos relates exactly to the idea that I thought of this morning that I was interested in sharing with you. The very first Mishnah in the sixth parak of Pirkei Avos reads as follows: Rabbi Meir Omer, Kolosik b'Torah Lishma Zocha L'Dvarim Harbe. A person who learns Torah Lishma is Zocha to a lot of things. V'lo Od Elisha Kololam Kolo Kedai Hulo. And not only that, the whole world is worth it for him, is kedai, for the person who is osik b'torah l'shma. So what does it say about a person who is osik b'torah l'shma? So it says, nikra reya. He is called a reya. And what else? Oheva samakom. He loves Hashem, and oheva sabrios, and he loves the brios, and it goes on to say, mesameach samakom, more and more beautiful things about the person who is osik b'torah l'shma. So one question that I wanted to deal with is that I was listening to a question-answer session with Rabbi Breidowitz from Or Sameach, and it happens to be fascinating. He has in Or Sameach, people could ask anything, and there are a lot of very interesting talmidim there. Some who are brand new to Frumkeit, and they ask very interesting questions. So one of the talmidim asked, one of the talmidim in Or Sameach said, why is it that in the Hebrew language the shorish of the word for friend is the same shorish as the word for evil? Right? Nikra Reya. Reya means a friend. It's Reish Ayin. Ra is evil. V'ahavta l'reya ha'kamocha. Ava v'yachva v'shalom v'reyus. Reyim ha'ahuvim. It's Reya. Reya means a friend. But Ra is evil. So why is it that the Hebrew language, which is so deep and so important and has such a nuance to it and such a meaning to it, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu would make it, that in Lashon HaKodesh, the word for Ra and Reya are the same letters. So I don't know, if I was asked that question, I would probably just say, I don't know. But Rabbi Breidowitz had an answer on the spot, and I want to share that answer with you. But before I share that answer with you, a couple of more questions from this morning's part. In Parshas Buchlukosai, probably the most often darshaned about Rashi on Parshas Buchlukosai is the very first Rashi on Parshas Buchlukosai. Right? The Pasuk says in Buchlukosai Telechu, so Rashi famously says, Yachol Zeh Kiyum HaMitzvos. You might think that this is a reference to Kiyum HaMitzvos. No, it's a reference to Tiyu Amelim B'Torah, that if someone is an Amel B'Torah, so therefore all the psukim that follow that say in Buchlukosai Telechu, you're going to have Gishmechem B'Itam, V'Nosar Tzivula, all the brachas you're going to have, it's not for mitzvos, it's for Amelim B'Torah. But I would argue that the way I just quoted Rashi is a terrible misquote of Rashi, and it's the way it's most often quoted, but I think it's terribly mistaken. Because you read what Rashi really says, I skipped a critical part of the Rashi. Rashi says, Yachol Zeh Kiyum HaMitzvos. You might think B'chukos HaTelechu means to fulfill mitzvos. No, it can't mean kiyuma mitzvos, because the very next phrase already says kiyuma mitzvos, meaning it's not that it means amelus betorah because it's about only amelus betorah. No, it means amelus betorah because to say that it means kiyuma mitzvos would be redundant, because it already says that these brachos hinge on kiyuma mitzvos. Where Rashi is really telling us, it's not that amelus betorah alone earns one all of the brachos, it's that amelus betorah in concert with, in connection with, kiyuma mitzvos earns one all of the brachos of the Torah. But then the question, and by the way, on the flip side, when we get to the Tochacha, v'im lo tishmuli, Rashi again says, lo tishmuli means that you're not amelim b'torah, lios amelim b'torah. But again, how do I know that it means amelim b'torah? Because the next line is, v'lo sasu es kol ha-mitzvos ha'ele. It's the combination of Torah and mitzvos that brings about the brachos, the failure in both Torah and mitzvos that brings about the klala. But then the question begs itself, Torah is one of the mitzvos. So why is it that Amelus Petorah is singled out? You probably have to do every mitzvah really well. Why is it that Amelus Petorah is singled out to be separated from all of the other mitzvos? And the third question. You go and you read the Tochacha, and the Tochacha starts out the way you would expect the Tochacha to start out. Imlo Tishmuli, V'lo Sasu is called Mitzvah. If you don't listen to Hashem, B'chukosai Timosu, as Mishpatai Tigal Navshachem, Levilti Asu is called Mitzvah Seil, Africhem is Brisi. You're really evil, you behave terribly, so what's Hashem going to do? Afani Es is Oslachem, I'm going to treat you in kind, and you're going to have suffering, and all these terrible things. And it goes on for several psukim, exactly the way you'd expect the Tochacha to go on. And then in Pasuk Chaf Alev, something changes. In Perek Chavav, Pasuk Chavav, Parsha B'chukosai, we start a series of about 10 psukim, where all of a sudden, there's a word that just keeps on repeating itself, that just keeps on coming up. I counted 7 times the word comes up in the next few psukim. And what's that word? What does it say? Vim telchu imi, keri. That if you go with me, keri. V'lo sovel ishmali. And it goes on to say, a few psukim later, vim bezos lo tishmuli v'alachtem imi bekeri, or even before that, the pasuk says vim beilu lo tivashuli v'alachtem imi keri v'alachti imachem b'chamas keri. Over and over and over again. I can't find all the times right now, but 7 times it says the word keri in the next few psukim. What is that? What new dimension is being added to the Tochacha 10 psukim in, after we already went through the basic format of Tochacha? What new dimension is being added to the Tochacha? So the machshava that hit me this morning is as follows. You know, when we think about our relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam, it's impossible to know what a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam really is. Because the Ribono Shel Olam is a kel elyon. The Ribono Shel Olam is a kel mistater. He's hidden from us. He's beyond our comprehension. We can never really fully comprehend the Ribono Shel Olam. So the way we typically treat our relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam is that we view our human relationships, our most prized and special human relationships, and we use those as a muscle for the relationship to the Ribono Shel Olam. And the two most common relationships to refer to as a point of reference when thinking about a relationship with the Ribono Shel Olam is, number one, the relationship of a parent and a child, Avu Ben, that Hashem is our father, Avinu Malkeinu, Avinu Shvashamayim, that we're Banim Lamakom, Bini Bechori Yisrael, right, that Hashem is our father. And the other one is the relationship of Ish V'Isha, of a man and a woman, right? Al Tikri Marasha Elama Urasa. The Rambam describes that the Ava one should have for Hashem is like a man who's lovesick over a woman that he can't stop thinking about her, right? The relationship of Ish V'Isha. The thing is, you know, if those are the two relationships we're supposed to think about when we think about how we relate to the Ribono Shel Olam, those two relationships could not be more different from each other in their nature. Yeah, they're both very loving relationships. They're both very close relationships. But you think about the relationship of Avu Ben, there's a clear hierarchy. Meaning, a parent has brought the child into the world, hopefully has nurtured the child, has sacrificed for the child knows that they have a chiv to be mechabed the parent. There's this, it's driven by this endless sense of hakaras hatov. It's a hakaras hatov that can never, ever possibly be paid back. It's a kind of debt that a child has for a parent, that no matter how much goodness, how much kindness, how much respect, you're never gonna meet the measure that's expected of a person. You learn the kibra of the aim sugyas, the Maseches Kiddushin, is frightening to learn about just the level of our requirement of kibra of the aim. That's avu ben. Ish v'isha is totally different. It's two people on an even level with each other, and it's driven by a sense of partnership, a sense of romantic love. It's not at all driven by the same type of sense that Avu Ben is driven by. And how are both, what's the common denominator? How are both of those relationships somehow a symbol of the relationship we're supposed to have with the Ribbono Shel Olam? So the thought that occurred to me is that the relationships, both of these relationships, when done right, are relationships of remarkable consistency and loyalty. Meaning there's something about a parent and a child relationship where the parent will always be there for the child, regardless of what the child is going through, regardless of how the child behaves. You know, all the years that I taught in DRS, a lot of times there are parent-teacher conferences, and sometimes there were kids that weren't always, doing what they should be doing all the time, let's say, to put it mildly. And sometimes, like, a parent will come in and a parent will say, "What can we do for my tzaddik?" And you know, the teacher will say, "Your tzaddik? Tzaddik? You know what a tzaddik looks like?" But to the parent, the child's a tzaddik. It's just we haven't yet brought out exactly how he's going to appear that way to the rest of the world. And it's just our job to make sure that that we give him the tools to express that tzidkus to the rest of the world. Because no matter what the child does, you know, you have a little child and the parent gets angry at him, he does something wrong, and, reprimands him, and the child's running up to his room, and, in a fit of anger, and he trips and he hurts himself. So the parent right away runs over and gives him a big hug and a kiss and tries to make the boo-boo better. Why? Weren't you just angry at him a second ago? Because there's a consistency in the love for a parent and a child. It's an avashayin atliya bedavar. It's not dependent on any particular behavior or anything. It's just an automatic, consistent love in a healthy parent-child relationship. And the same is true with ish v'isha. You know, one thing I always tell chassanim, when I learn with chassanim before the wedding, is to always tell them, you don't always have to agree with your wife. You're not always going to agree with your wife. And it's okay to disagree. She doesn't want you to just be a yes man all the time. Sometimes she actually wants you to share your opinion carefully, respectfully, all of that. But she wants your opinion. But the point is that even when she's wrong, if she's having an argument with someone, if she's going through something with another person, you always have her back. You are always on her team. Because that's what a husband is, that's what a wife is. That they're a team, they're a unit, and there should be this remarkable consistency in that relationship. And I think based on that idea of the consistency of a relationship, the consistency of a relationship being the foundation, the bedrock of a relationship, whether it be an Avu Ben, whether it be Ish V'Isha, I think that answers the questions that we began with. Rabbi Breidowitz said, why is Ra and Reya the same? Because friendship is really measured when things are a little bit bad. Friendship is really measured. Who's a real friend? Who's a true friend? Who's someone that you could rely on? It's when it's not easy to be friends with that person. When things are difficult, when it's going to take a little bit of sacrifice, when you're a little upset at the person. Reyim ha'ahuvim, we refer to at Sheva Brachos, is because in order to have true ahava she'ena tuliyah b'davar, there needs to be that sense of reyos first. There needs to be a time where there's a particular challenge, either in life or in that relationship, that you work through together. You know why is the Mishnah says that someone who's osek b'torah l'shma is nikra reya, because torah l'shma is not easy. Torah l'shma has no self-interest. Torah l'shma is just because I want to be there for the Ribbono Shel Olam day in and day out. And what does it say? Nikra reya, ohev es hamakom. The very next words are ohev es hamakom. If you're a true lover of Hashem, you first have to go through a sense of nikra reya. You first have to get through a challenge in your relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. In Sheva Brachos say, Ava v'yachva v'shalom v'reyos. And assuming, achron achron chaviv, reyos is the highest madrega. because a person is going to have that kind of relationship. A relationship of reus means a relationship that's been tested, a relationship that's come through in challenging times. You know, it's like I once heard from Rabbi Prero from Chicago. He said that he heard from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein once. I think Rav Aaron Lichtenstein was the Rosh Yeshiva when Simcha Yitzchak, when a dear friend of Simcha Yitzchak was in Har Etzion. So he had a sheichus with Rav Lichtenstein. So Rav Lichtenstein once said that what does it mean? The Chazal say that a wife should be an ezer kenegdo. So Chazal say, zacha ezer, lo zacha kenegdo. So Rav Lichtenstein said, what does that mean? Zacha, lo zacha. He said, no, zacha means that when he's right, she should be an ezer to him. She should support him in his correct decisions. And lo zacha kenegdo. And when he's not right, she should give him a little pushback and tell him, you know, maybe you're not so right about this one. And that's a true relationship. A true relationship is someone who's always present, who's always there to engage, never walks away from the relationship. That's true reus. And I think that's what it means when we describe in the Chumash that amelus b'torah, the Rashi writes, that amelus b'torah combined with kiyumei mitzvos. Why do we single out amelus b'torah? Because amelus b'torah is something that requires remarkable consistency. V'yigisabo yomam v'layla, every day, every night. And that creates the context, the framework for mitzvos. You see, if mitzvos were just blips on the screen, there were these flashes of avodas Hashem, they'd be meaningless or less meaningful. But a mitzvah that comes in the context of amelus b'torah, and it's come out in the Furish and Rashi, the next Rashi, that's mitzvos tishmoru, havu amelim b'torah al menas lishmor l'kayim. You learn Torah in order to be shomer the mitzvos, to be mekayim the mitzvos. Amelus b'torah represents that foundation, that bedrock, upon which kiyum mitzvos is given a context, through which kiyum mitzvos is given a context, where kiyum mitzvos is the natural outgrowth of a relationship that's there the whole time. And then that brings us to the word keri, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to us, you know what your relationship with me has to be? It has to be a relationship with Avu Ben. It has to be a relationship with Ish V'Isha. It has to be a reus. It has to be a relationship that even when tested, you're still going to be there. You're always going to be present. And that's why the Tocha starts out and Hashem says, you're not going to listen to me and you're going to do terrible things. And then I'm going to pat you over the head. I'm going to give you a real, I'm going to bop you over the head. I'm going to give you a real suffering. And then what? What's your next move? How do you react to that? How do you react when the relationship is challenged? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu starts saying, Keri, if it happens that you're a fair weather friend, that you're only there when things are good, you're only there when things are going the way that you'd like them to go, and you react negatively to that, and you disappear from the relationship, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that it's going to be 10 times worse. And he emphasizes that over and over and over again. Because we don't have to be perfect Jews. No one has to be perfect. No one can be perfect. But what's required of us is that we're always engaging the Ribbono Shel Olam. That the Ribbono Shel Olam is always a part of our lives. That there's never a sense of carry in our relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. I think this is the message of how we engage in relationships in general, Bein Adam L'Chaveiro, as well as in the relationship Bein Adam L'Makom. I just want to point out that I'm so blown away by not only Simcha Yitzchak, Rav Simcha Yitzchak himself, in his desire to want to increase Torah learning, his desire to want to increase people's sense of connectedness to the Ribbono Shel Olam, dafka when the Ribbono Shel Olam throws a curveball, dafka when the Ribbono Shel Olam says, you know what, sometimes it's a relationship of Reya with a little bit of Ra, with a little bit of a sense of why is this happening, this wasn't part of the plan. But Kadosh Baruch Hu says, let's see what your next move is going to be. Is it going to be carry? Are you going to shy away? Or is it going to be doubling down on that relationship, saying that I will not leave. I'm here with the Ribbono Shel Olam, and I'm here to grow and enhance my relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. And I'm so, so touched by the resolve to try to always, always come closer to the Ribbono Shel Olam that Rav Simcha Yitzchak and his family has. And Bez Hashem, that resolve should pay off with great schar, the great schar of, as we said today, in the Birchas HaChodesh, Chaim Shel Bracha, Chaim Shel Parnasa, Chaim Shel Tova, Chaim Shel Brius HaGuf, it should be Be'ezras Hashem going forward. And we should share in many, 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 many good times to share Torah together. Have a wonderful evening and a good Tavach, everybody.